Breaking news, this is your World War III update. I got to make this video quick because it is hot as hell here. Not quite as hot as it is in Vegas, from what I hear. Smashing all-time records of 120 degrees Fahrenheit. I can't even imagine that. Here, it is 30 degrees Celsius today, and that is insufferable for us Canadians. I think I speak for most Canadians when I say that. Now, where do we begin? Last night I made a video, but I didn't publish it, believe it or not. I know people are going to say, sure you did. Well, I got the video. I could release it if, you know, people really want to challenge me on this. But essentially in that video, I postulated that the deep state, the interagency, the neocons, the transatlantic, the globalists, whatever you want to call them, they need big events right now. Like a baby needs mother's milk. That's what they need in order to keep the gravy train for the military-industrial complex moving along. And sure enough, here we go. This morning, they get a little something-something. Now, we're going to break down the events of Kyiv today, but we'll quickly go over the headlines and understand that right now, they need some sort of major, let's just call it what it is. They need some. It could be real, it could be imagined, or it could be a false flag. They need an assassination, an attack on a nuclear plant, a new pandemic, a biological pathogen, a chemical attack. They need a massive civilian terror attack, a sinking of a U.S. warship, a bombing of a U.S. military base, a nuclear dirty bomb, a mass shooting, cyber attack, attack on critical infrastructure, deep sea infrastructure, as they've been talking about in the North Sea. They need a January 6-like upheaval or some kind of Maidan coup in order to galvanize the West, who is certainly starting to wane in their support for this conflict. In fact, I would say up until this weekend, I sincerely thought that we had turned a corner with Orban's visit. But as it turns out, the opposite is true. And I'll quickly explain to you why that is. So Sergei Lavrov has said that AFU missiles, okay, the Armed Forces of Ukraine missiles, would not have flown, including into Sevastopol, without the direct participation of the United States in guidance. You will find out about the Russian Federation's response in the foreseeable future. Now, what has Orban said? I'm going to organize all my notes here. And just remember, while I'm looking for my notes on Orban, what all NATO countries, especially the Intermarium Baltic states, as well as Poland, has been saying for the longest time. Well, they've been saying that essentially, if Russia succeeds in Ukraine, then we're going to have World War III. That's what Boris Pistorius was saying. He was the German defense minister. That's what many of the, Patrick Ryder, the defense minister in the UK, they've all been saying the same thing, that if Russia wins, it's World War III. Now, anybody with half a brain knows full well that if NATO encroaches on Russia's borders and succeeds in pushing the Russians out of the Donbass, then that absolutely guarantees that we're going to see tactical nukes fly that are already pre-positioned in Belarus and around Ukraine. But the mainstream media wants everybody to believe the converse. Nonetheless, that means that they're going to get their license for war mobilization. So it's really a question of, are things going to escalate in the next few months, or are they going to escalate in the next few years? I thought that we had turned a corner over the weekend with Orban's visits to Zelensky, with Putin, with Xi Jinping. And I believe he had visited with Trump in the past. I believe he is going to visit with, who is he going to visit with now? It's another important figure in all of this. But I thought we had turned a corner, but it appears as though the jury is still out after the events of today. Okay, so Viktor Orban basically said today, and I don't have the direct quote in front of me here, but it was something to the extent of, I tried to mediate a deal, but I failed. So now, in the next 2 to 3 months, remember what Aleksandar Vučić said, the president of Serbia. He said that we're going to see World War III in the next 2 to 3 months. Now, Orban today said that we are going to see a massive battle unfold in the next 2 to 3 months, which is going to determine the outcome of the war. That is what he said today. So the question is, what sort of intelligence do these guys have? Do we know where it's going to happen? I've been debating with people. Is it going to be in Kharkov? Is it going to be in Odessa? Is it going to be Zaporozhye? Is it going to be Kherson? Is it going to be somewhere along that front? Or are the Russians just going to leapfrog that? Because now you have all these bilateral agreements being made with NATO countries and Ukraine. What that does is absolve them from having to invoke Article 5. So if Russia, say, attacks Polish bases that they're sending materiel into Ukraine from, then that means that they don't necessarily have to trigger Article 5. If it was an attack on just Poland itself, Poland can say, well, in light of this bilateral agreement that we have with Ukraine, we don't have to invoke Article 5. Things don't have to go nuclear. Now, why that's important, and let me just go over all of the key things today, but just remember, they need some major event. Otherwise, this whole thing collapses. The whole Biden PSYOP right now, what the hell is that about? I mean, what the hell is going on with the Biden PSYOP? You got to ask yourself, it's like somebody just flicked a switch. And you really have to say, who flicked the switch? Who said it was all right to criticize Joe Biden all of a sudden? You really got to ask yourself, somebody did. Was it just a critical mass, the inertia of a certain amount of people saying, okay, this is silly? You can't tell me it was the debate, because he's performed far poorly. I mean, we're talking about hairy legs in the sun, Biden. I mean, years ago, he was saying shit that was way worse than how he performed in the debate. So somebody was behind that. So it makes you wonder, why the timing? Why now? Right? So it makes you wonder, do they want Trump in there? Or do they have some plan? Or is there some 25th Amendment wild card thing coming down the pike? Or are they just trying to bleed this guy dry? Or have the media just, are they just that dumb and they've only now realized it? I mean, these are questions. But barring some major provocative, real, imagined, or false flag event, this thing is about to, the brakes are about to be put on the military-industrial complex in Ukraine. Now, today, they're going to milk what happened there. But I'm going to break down the Russian side and, of course, understand that it's illegal to film things in Ukraine. That's just a fact. It's illegal. You cannot film things for the purpose of military concealment. They don't want people filming things and uploading things. You can go to jail or worse. So whenever you see video footage coming out, you have to ask yourself, why are we allowed to see this footage? Okay. Now, anyways, here are the headlines today. Russia apparently was able to get 40 successful missile strikes through. Now, we're never going to know the real details, but that's what they're saying. Poland has agreed to, or is in talks, I should say, under this bilateral agreement made with the Ukrainians, in talks to shoot down Russian missiles over the western part of Ukraine, which would essentially be a no-fly zone. That's what it would be. Of course, they would shoot down Russian missiles that were inbound to certain destinations, and then the Russians would be forced to respond, thus not triggering Article 5, because this was under a bilateral agreement. You see where that's going? They've also agreed to assemble a volunteer force, which is going to be comprised, they claim, of Ukrainian, the Ukrainian diaspora who want to volunteer. Well, I don't see why they want to volunteer it already. I'm thinking that this is cover for NATO, essentially. Ukraine allegedly, according to Newsweek, tried stealing a Russian nuclear-capable bomber. You can't make this shit up. Israel has targeted a Iranian ship, and I believe there were several other targets struck along the Syrian coastline, so you know there's going to be retaliation for that. Iran, in spite of having a more moderate politician elected, and they've done this because, you know, this is genius on the part of the Iranians and the Ayatollah. Give the people what they want. They know a massive war with Israel is coming. So you have to make sure that you've appeased the majority of people. And the majority of people in Iran, you know, they tend to have pro-Western views. Maybe not the majority, but there's definitely the youth are feeling somewhat disenfranchised. So you need to appease them to minimize the risk that the Mossad and the CIA and MI6 can go in there and drum up unrest when the shooting starts, okay? So anyways, the Iranian president, who now arguably doesn't have much power because ultimately it lies in the theocratic regime, anyways, the Ayatollah, but he's now claiming that they're willing to go back for talks with the JCPOA and restart the nuclear deal talks. Despite this, we have some very aggressive, hardline, ultra-right-wing I don't know which party. Are they the Likud party, Avigdor Lieberman in Israel, saying that, you know, we should just nuke Iran right now, and that's the only way we're going to be able to get to their nuclear plants is to nuke them. Talk about irony, nuking a country because you're worried they're going to get nukes. Only in the West could we rationalize that as being something morally justifiable. Lavrov is saying that a surprise is coming for the West. I already talked about that. Germany is saying that the only way that they're going to be able to get the amount of forces that they need for World War III is if they mobilize women. So I foresee that you're going to see a lot of pregos real soon to dodge the draft. See, unfortunately, men, we don't have the option of becoming pregnant to dodge the draft. Oh, did I say something? I said something offensive, didn't I? Never mind that. If you can just probably, you know, claim that you're a cat and you're having a litter of kittens, and then you'll be fine. If you want a good laugh, go and watch the video that we did just yesterday. It was kind of a sarcastic persiflage against just prepping in general and how easy prepping is, and the idea that it's kind of absurd that people even need guidance on this sort of thing, because this used to be commonplace and normal. Anyways, it's a short 8-minute sarcastic blurb that we decided to give people a lighter weekend, because of course this stuff gets very, very heavy. Israel has now admitted to using the Hannibal Doctrine on October 7th. A lot of people were chastised as being disinfo agents and propagandists when they said that back in the day, when the evidence showed as such. Now it's being broadcast on the New York Times, of all places. The Houthis have threatened the Saudis. This is the quiet wild card that is escalating in the Middle East. If the Houthis start attacking Saudi airports and oil refineries, if you think that a war between Iran and Israel is going to cause the prices of oil to skyrocket, considering that a lot of Iran's oil isn't even on the open market, at least not officially. They sell it to the Chinese, but I don't know how much it affects the global oil prices. If you start seeing the Saudis get hit, then look out, and that very well could be part of the plan. Of course, if the price of oil goes through the roof, China's system is going to collapse, because here we are self-sufficient, or at least that's the thinking. And maybe Peter Zion, if anybody knows who he is, might be vindicated in his Chinese collapse predictions, although I would not rule out the Chinese. A very formidable and very well-disciplined people. When I look at these Chinese kids in school, and then I look at our schools, it's like, you know, they're exponentially more advanced in many respects. Estonia is rapidly building 600 bunkers. They want to have this completed by early 2025. This is going to be along this 700-mile, is it miles or kilometers? One or the other, fortification line that's going to separate the Baltics from Russia. So they're ready for war. I mean, make no mistake, they're getting ready for a conventional war with Russia, which seems absolutely absurd, but that's what they're doing. And so this tells me that maybe they're planning on things going nuclear, but only in a tactical sense. And there's all sorts of other variables that we really have to break down in terms of tactical nuclear combat and the feasibility of it. Of course, there's going to be blowback, a fallout. Yes, you can detonate nuclear weapons, and we're going to have experts on to talk about this that are lower fallout, have less radioactive fallout. You can do it in such a way where you're just maximizing for electromagnetic pulse effects. There's neutron bombs, but there's also unintended effects. And I think this is the only reason why nukes haven't been used yet, is not so much the risk of a vertical escalation, but it's more about feasibility at this point. Once it becomes ideal to use it somewhere, I mean, the best case scenario I've heard up until this point is irradiating a space, doing some sort of ground burst and irradiating a space so enemy troops cannot advance. The Russians used to train for that kind of combat during the Cold War era. I'm not sure if they do any more, but these are things just to keep in mind. Okay, there's a lot of weird stuff going on right now. USA is going to continue, according to John Kirby, to allow Ukraine to strike deep into Russia, and France is most certainly on the brink of some kind of civil war. You have, I think it was Le Pen, she got the right-wing candidate, she got 37% of the vote. Macron got, was it 20%? And Macron got more seats, because 200 of the candidates decided to pull out of the race so that they could form this coalition and disenfranchise the voters. So yeah, you're going to see shit hit the fan, especially if they really start pushing on this Ukraine issue, which is why I'm saying they need a big event. Barring some major event, this thing is over. And that might be good. You might think that might be good. It may be good in the short term for stock market. You know, markets might rally a little bit. But what does that really mean? It means the end of U.S. financial hegemony, the beginning of the end. Look at Putin and Modi today. India, the biggest country in the world in terms of population and manpower, hugging Vladimir Putin. Now, some people say that that's a Trojan horse and Modi is playing both sides of the fence and they just want that cheap oil from Russia. Maybe so. At the same time, you're seeing Putin and Modi hug. They're members of BRICS. You got really the $7 billion that Putin is aligning himself with. I haven't seen him, you know, be this diplomatically outgoing since this war began, traveling. There's even talks that he might travel to Turkey, although I think Turkey is probably one of the biggest forked tongues out there. I would not trust Orban as far as I could throw him, and I'm sure, you know, Putin feels the same way. I mean, it's one thing when you have India, but then it's another when you have Turkey, who has U.S. nuclear weapons stored in their country. Okay, and of course the Turks have been providing Ukrainians with weaponry as well. So it's one of those weird situations. So on the one hand, you have a lot of bullish factors for peace. You have Zelensky's rumors of talking about negotiations, even though now, you know, it seems like one day they're saying, yeah, we want peace. The next day, same old story. They're saying we don't want peace and, you know, ceasefire is non-negotiable, blah, blah, blah. You have Biden, who's clearly on his way out. I mean, there is no, they seriously think we're that dumb to believe. I say, it's one thing to believe that this guy has the capability to win the election. As much of a long shot as it may be, you may be able to say something could happen. But the idea that at this current rate of deterioration, he's going to be able to last 4 years, that they want people to believe that is an insult to everybody's intelligence. You have Starmer, who, despite, you know, coming out of the gates and pledging his allegiance to Vladimir Zelensky, he's a new leader. He's the new UK prime minister. There's a possibility that they're going to go a little bit softer on the Ukrainian front. You have Stoltenberg being replaced, who's actually going to be replaced by more of a hawkish NATO leader, Mark Rutte, I believe his name is. You have Kaja Kallas, which is a Russophobic hardliner as well. You have so many, these are actually, I just listed off all the bearish factors for World War III in terms of things that increase the likelihood. But there's also a lot of things that have happened, like with the Orban visit. I really thought that that might represent, and you know, over the weekend you had the Iranian president who's more moderate, who is more open to peace talks, and I think that is, again, that's just a very clever move by the Ayatollah to try to pacify their domestic population in the run-up to war with Israel to minimize the risk of civil war. But you did have some signs of hope. You know, you have this lack of RQ-4 Global Hawk spy drones in the Black Sea right now. We haven't seen them for the last week. They are, however, flying around Kaliningrad in the Baltic states. In fact, they're aggressively surveying those areas, which is probably why the Belarusians are on such a high state of alert right now and why they're amassing forces on the border there. But you have the Le Pen, you know, we thought that Le Pen was going to win, and I'd have no dog in the fight, really. I try to remain apolitical because I find that's the best way to make accurate predictions, is by not dying in a trench, literally and figuratively. You had the momentum with Trump and this, as delusional as it may be, this insistence that he's going to be able to resolve the Ukrainian crisis in 24 hours and Putin's openness to that. These were all hopeful silver linings. And then you come to find that, no, Trump is actually incredibly antagonistic when it comes to nuclear matters. I went over that in the video that I did on Friday, where we talked about he was one of the ones who pulled out the INF treaty. There's people within his cabinet that want to bring back nuclear testing and a litany of other very pro nuclear escalatory moves. So unfortunately, that shit's just not going to happen. Either way, it's World War III. It's just a matter of where on the map are they going to move. So the question is, if this thing in Ukraine is going to slow down, which it's, I don't think it is, because Alexander Vučić, president of Serbia, has said in the next 2-3 months, we're going to see World War III. Orban has confirmed that he tried to negotiate peace. He failed. So we're going to see a massive push in the next 2-3 months. The question is, how is the West going to respond to that? How is the Western media going to respond to that? How is the election cycle going to play that? And is that why Biden is sticking in? Because they know that this thing is going to ramp up right around election time, that we're going to see some crazy atrocities happen in Ukraine. And this is just spitballing here, but we like to think on this channel. To some people, they don't really like that much. And I would say, well, you know where the door is. The attack on Kiev today. Now, there's a lot of speculation, misinformation about this. I'm going to give you the Russian point of view. Clearly, it would be in nobody's interest in the Russian government for them to target a children's hospital intentionally. Could it have happened as collateral damage? Absolutely. Did it happen? Well, we must just believe whatever the Ukrainian government says, because, of course, it's illegal to film in Ukraine. That's number one. Under martial law, okay, and it's illegal to film there, so you basically have to take them at their word. And if you speak out against that, out of turn, then not only are you excoriated online, but you also run the risk of being canceled. So we're not going to say anything is 100%, but we can share with you the Russian perspective and the Ukrainian perspective. According to the Ukrainian government, the Russians intentionally targeted a children's hospital. I think one of the more lighter explanations is that they just missed and that they're idiots and they wasted this $10 million missile, Kinzhal missile on, I think it was a Kinzhal missile, I could be wrong about that, on just a target and they missed. Now, the Russian explanation, of course, is far more nuanced, as anybody who is really trying to be objective about this would appreciate. Russia claims that they were trying to target a gathering of high-ranking officers that were in a building adjacent to said hospital. And interestingly, the strategy changed. Typically, these attacks are launched at night. This time, it was different. So they launched during the day, and they did this as a bit of a ruse to try to get around Ukrainian defenses. Nobody expected it, which is not to say that they haven't done attacks in the day before, but of this magnitude, the Russians are claiming that they got 40 strikes through. Now, they're also saying, and you'll notice that all of these attacks were in the same place. Okay, so if this was just Ukraine shot them down, or it was just Russian error in targeting, that makes no sense. What does make sense, I gotta say, is the Russian explanation. Here's what the Russians say. They say that Ukrainian security officials were annihilated near the Omadit Children's Hospital. The decision-making center of the Ukrainian security forces was located there, and these were in bunkers beneath the building. Now, what do you need to target bunkers that are hundreds of meters down? Well, you need to either collapse the structure, and to do that, you're going to need several hits on the same place, which is what we've seen in the videos. And they're saying that these underground bunkers of the Artyom aviation plant in the city center were destroyed. Russian sources suggest that NATO high-ranking specialists and the operational leadership of the Ukrainian armed forces were staying in the plant bunkers at the moment of the attack. Now, remember what Lavrov said. He said, you'll find out about the Russian Federation's response in the foreseeable future. That was 2 days ago. And man, I wish I would have released the video I did last night on this topic that I uploaded, but I never published because it was too late and I figured everybody would be asleep. And, you know, if people don't believe me about that, I suppose I could release it. But it's neither here nor there because the news cycle is so fast. Anyways. So now they're saying that, according to the Russian point of view, they need something to galvanize the population there who wants a lot of the population, of course, scared to speak their minds because they'll be mobilized, especially the males. They're saying that they need this event and they need to crystallize it as a heinous Russian attack. Italy is now trying to bring charges against Russia in the International Criminal Court for war crimes. They need this to justify further mobilization and drum up attention before the NATO summit, which is pending. Now, some people are claiming that these were NASAMS missiles. Those are the Norwegian air-to-surface missiles, I believe. But, I mean, you can just, you know, you can go down that rabbit hole of looking at the pictures and wondering if it was AI-generated. And it's just, we're never going to know, okay? Based on my experience with this stuff, if the explanation seems way too oversimplified, like something that's way out of character, like, why on earth would the Russians, I mean, if you want to get the world against you, bomb a children's hospital. I mean, it just makes no sense whatsoever. What would make sense is that they're practicing the Hamas doctrine and that they were using those places as human shields, which is not out of character for the Ukrainians, I should add, and probably not for the Russians either, or for anyone in modern warfare for that matter. Anyways, Russia is going to present to the UN Security Council facts about the shelling of Kyiv in this morning, which absolutely do not confirm the Ukrainian version of this incident. That is according to the Russian deputy envoy to the UN, Dmitry Polyansky. And again, that is not my perspective. That is just the perspective of the Russians. Gotta say that because I know there's going to be some apoplectic blue hairs in the comments section who are pulling out their blue hair because I'm not subscribed to the flavor of the month. What we like to think on this channel. And you know what? Judge, people think this is a green screen. That's prepping supplies. There's a reason why we have all those prepping supplies, and it's because we're getting ready for World War fucking 3. All right? That's the reason. And the people who have money are doing that too, and I recommend that you do your level best to do that as well, even if that just means getting the skills, getting in shape, and having a mindset of somebody who is self-directed. A big part of self-reliance is just thinking for yourself, being creative, not succumbing to functional fixedness. Now, what's going on in the Middle East, there was just an event that occurred where Israeli, I'm not sure if they were fighter jets, I presume they were, targeted an Iranian ship. I believe this was a cargo vessel that was alleged to be transporting weapon systems into Syria, and apparently an Iranian figure who was present there was also killed. If they were an important one, then you can expect an Iranian retaliation. The Iranians' new prime minister, or president, I should say, have now officially backed up Hezbollah, saying that when Israel attacks Hezbollah, they will back them up. So Iran's newly elected president has sent a message to Hezbollah. Now, a friend of mine who's very well-versed in Middle Eastern politics, he thinks that the wild card that is going to present itself here is with the Houthis and the Saudis. Apparently, the Americans have cut off Yemen, even the pro-Western part of Yemen. And I don't know anything about this, but I'm just going to parlay the information they shared. They tend to be very well-versed and very accurate in their predictions. They've basically said that they were cut off of this banking system that allows them to transact with the world. And that has caused the Houthi leader to give a very scathing attack on the Saudi leadership. And essentially, unlike we've ever seen before, okay? And what this, of course, means is that they could potentially be on the brink of war. Now, he thinks it's a part of a ploy to get the Saudis entangled in this conflict, to take attention away from, or that is going to be the real play, and that this is going to bring war to the Middle East, because, of course, when the ultimate goal with all of this is China. They're really worried about China. They're worried about the Russians. Yeah, they have nukes, but economically speaking, could they be an economic powerhouse someday? Sure, absolutely. That's not going to happen for probably, economic powerhouse, I mean like global superpower. We're talking about decades for Russia. We're talking about, you know, right now for China. So the goal is to get rid of China. How do you do that? China needs energy. They tried with Russia. They brought it as close as they could without it going nuclear. They probably still will continue to try to push it a little bit more. Now they're going to the Middle East. They're going to kick up the dust there a little bit. They know that they have enough oil to supply the domestic needs of the population here. And they got Trump coming in, so you know he's going to drill, baby, drill. But that's going to require a level of nationalization of the oil supply, which the global economy is not going to like, and that's going to have implications for the global financial system, because of course it's pegged to the petrodollar, which of course the Saudis, it's no more. So, I mean, there's so many moving parts here, but essentially a stronger Russia and a stronger China and a stronger BRICS means a weaker global financial system. And right now you have a situation that this fiat house of cards with our massive amounts of debt, despite whatever sort of Looney Tune fantasy is going on in the stock market right now, with it reaching all-time highs and up 25% on the year, that's called a market melt-up, guys. Go look at George Gammon's channel if you want to know more about that. But what we know is that inevitably that means that our economy is going to contract. If theirs is expanding, ours will contract, which is not to say that we can't all just be prosperous together, but we live in a game theory competitive financial world, and because we've abused the global credit card, that is the global reserve currency, and we have the ability to print money undeterred and unfettered, then we are going to have to basically deal with the fallout from that, which likely will just mean that people are not going to accept dollars anymore. So all that cheap stuff that we used to get from China, we're not going to get it from there anymore. So all the industry is going to have to come back to the United States in hopefully the form of automation, and hopefully Elon Musk robots will be good to go by then, because we all know that the blue hairs are not going to want to work in a factory. All right. Unless they can do it virtually. Where the hell was I? How did I go on some wicked-ass rant? Israel used the Hannibal Directive according to Haaretz. That was the organization. So Haaretz is a more left-leaning, if you can call it that, Israeli publication, and they're the ones that are claiming that the Israeli Defense Forces actually used the Hannibal Directive, and maybe not, you know, said, hey, we're using the Hannibal Directive, but the Hannibal Directive, if you don't know, it's essentially this idea that we will kill our own guys, we will kill friendlies and not distinguish between friendly and foe if there's a situation that it's in the interest of national security. So, for example, this hostage situation, and I'm not saying that this is exactly what happened, but as an example, if you have a terrorist organization that's trying to take hostages and you know that they're going to try to leverage that and that against your nation state, and it's going to have a greater negative impact if you allow them to use that, then you'll just shoot the hostage. And again, I'm not saying they said that. That's what Haaretz is implying with their reporting on said issue. So these are the same people that are talking about using the Samson option, hinting at using neutron bombs or definitely tactical nuclear bombs, explicitly stating that we should use nuclear weapons on Iran because there's no conventional solution for that issue. Again, that's Avigdor Lieberman. Russia and Iran are starting to do currency sharing. So think about all the things that are happening in terms of BRICS. You have Modi hugging Putin. You have the Chinese military doing drills in Belarus. Okay? Chinese military doing drills in Belarus. Iran and Russia, economic, political, and military partnership. You have the Chinese partnership. You have the North Korean strategic partnership, that which is even stronger than NATO, okay? So both sides of the equation are becoming incredibly solidified and more hard-lined in their views, and the chasm between the two is growing and growing, which makes it all the more impossible to bridge. Just reading the Houthi quote. So the Houthis, when they threatened Saudi Arabia, they said this: your service to the Israeli enemy prompts us to take steps that will have dire consequences for you. We will meet everything in kind, banks with banks, because of course it was the American bank sanctions that prompted this response. Riyadh Airport with Sana'a Airport, and ports with ports. So basically, they're, you know, infrastructure with their infrastructure. He also mentioned in his speech how the economic situation in Yemen is a very dire situation. And again, somebody who I know is incredibly well-versed in these topics said that he's never seen the Houthi leader speak that way before, okay? Germany, USA, and Ukraine are accusing Russia of chemical weapons use. The Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, the United States, Germany, and Ukraine are preparing an investigation against Russia, the head of the Radiation, Chemical, and Biological Defense Forces in Russia, according to Igor Kirillov. Of course, it's important to note that the Russians have accused the Ukrainians of the same thing. Again, we'll never know. And it just makes me wonder, if you're seeing such a wide range of fatality estimates in this conflict, I mean, Zelensky still insists that there was only, 36,000, somewhere between 36,000 to 60,000 people who died in the war, when you have other estimates as high as 700,000. Think of that range. Now project that back into history, before the internet. How much of history is complete and utter bullshit? That's what people should be thinking about. Stoltenberg has admitted again that NATO is at war with Russia. Well, no surprise there. A Chinese spokesperson has said, and just to add to that thread about, you know, the both sides of this war becoming more hardline in their viewpoints, NATO is a threat to global peace and stability because of its deep-rooted Cold War mentality and ideological basis, according to Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Lin Jian. So China is basically saying that NATO is a threat to global peace and stability. They're on the side of the Russians through and through. Argentina is considering applying for NATO. Talked about Chinese in Belarus. Estonia is building new bunker network by 2025. The project is set to include 600 bunkers and expected to cost Estonian taxpayers $65 million. In addition to bunkers, it's also going to feature anti-tank barriers and dragon's teeth, those cement triangles, razor wire, and anti-tank mines. It is noted, however, that these devices would only be put in place in the event of a conflict. Well, the fact that they're warehousing them at all, especially at a time when a lot of that stuff is needed in Ukraine, is quite telling. The authorities in the Lithuanian capital, and I talked about this last Friday, Vilnius announced last week that they had drawn up plans to ring the entire city with anti-tank obstacles, namely steel beam hedgehogs and concrete dragon's teeth, and that they can last, I believe it was 2 weeks. So they got 2 week window for NATO to get there, to come to their support. And now Reuters is saying that NATO is going to need another 35 to 50 additional brigades on top of this 300,000 strong mobilization force that they've already have. So another 350,000 troops in order to go to conventional war with the Russians. And that all of this is going to be discussed on July 11th at the NATO summit. Germany bringing back the draft and conscripting women. These are things that they're saying they need to do. Bundeswehr Inspector General Carsten Brewer said we need to recruit women. The socio-political conditions have changed radically in the last 80 years. They've said, you can't have your cake and eat it too, ladies. Unfortunately, if chivalry is dead, then that means all chivalry is dead. Currently, military service is frozen. And by the way, I'm not a proponent of this. I think, you know, you shouldn't send the breeders to war. I mean, just to get brutally biological about it, when you're trying to replenish a population, it's just stupid from a stupid economically and biologically. And you could say culturally and socially as well. Currently, military service is frozen, and according to the Constitution, it refers to the male population. Equality should be introduced here because the German must be capable of waging a war, because Germany must be capable of waging a war. Now, I know I probably pissed off some women by saying breeders, but women are far more than breeders. Let me just clarify that. You can be anything and do anything you want, but there are certain things that we can't do that you can do, okay? And that's procreating and propagating the species, I think, is a fairly important thing, especially post-World War III. So I'm guessing that this is a great way to stimulate birth rates is by saying, hey, if you're not pregnant, you're going to war. Or if you don't have children, you're going to war. I have a sneaking suspicion. I'm not even going to go there. I was going to make another bad joke. 400,000 soldiers or temporary permanent contracts are required, as well as another 100,000 reservists. And he says that without mandatory service, it simply won't work. I think that my theory of immigration and how they're going to give people a fast track to permanent residency is by saying, hey, you want permanent residency? Come and join the army. You speak decent English? come and join the army and we'll get you there. But you got to do a few tours of duty in this irradiated war zone on the Eastern Front first. NATO continues to circle Kaliningrad. NATO is redeploying warplanes following Russia's strike on Kiev that was just this morning. The Boeing KC-135T Stratotanker is flying towards the Polish border. And this has been going on for some time now. Again, the Kaliningrad region is getting quite hot. I reported that on Friday in terms of the military equipment that is currently there. A lot of the residual equipment and troops remain there after Steadfast Defender, which of course is the whole point of that exercise in the first place, was to establish a strong NATO foothold. Because indeed, Poland's next. And I think a lot of people in Poland know it. What else we got going on here? Ukraine tried to steal or hijack, they're saying, a nuclear bomber. According to Newsweek, Russia's Federal Security Service, the FSB, said that it thwarted an attempt by Ukrainian intelligence to recruit a Russian pilot to hijack a Tu-22M3 supersonic strategic bomber, which of course can carry nuclear weapons. It would be interesting to see what Ukraine would do with this, because of course it would likely be shot down, I presume, fairly easily. In a statement on Monday, the FSB said Ukraine's special services promised the Russian pilot Italian citizenship and money as a part of the deal that would see him fly and land the missile carrier in Ukraine. Interesting. Talked about the Kiev and Warsaw Agreement. This is a 10-year agreement. In addition to the Polish volunteer force and the no-fly zone discussed, it also might involve a squadron of MiG-29s. This no-fly zone that they're talking about over western Ukraine is a mechanism being developed by Poland to shoot down Russian missiles and drones in Ukrainian airspace that are launched in the direction of Poland. Well, that could be anywhere, in and around Lviv in particular. Now citizens of Ukraine who are in Poland, Lithuania, and other EU countries will be able to voluntarily join the defense of Ukraine. Yay, you mean all those draft dodgers will have the opportunity to join up? I think this is just the beginning of some sort of extradition attempt, but I guess we'll see. Meaning that they're going to try to make this mandatory at some point. Of course, Ukraine has proposed that, but many countries have not went along with it. And John Kirby has said that the USA will continue to allow strikes into Russia. Stock up now while the getting is good. Keep on prepping. But I must say, I'm a lot more hopeful. In spite of all the disquieting news of the day, I am a lot more hopeful than I was just a few days ago. Now, I think that's only temporary, okay? Because both sides have implacable demands, and it's very unlikely that we're going to come to any sort of resolution without some major battle. In order for any war to end, somebody has to win. You know, the United States won the Cold War. That's why it ended. It, fortunately for all of us, ended the only way it could have and the most peaceful way it could have, with the dissolution of the Soviet Union. I don't think that's going to happen this time. If anything, it's going to be the reverse when you see what's going on in the United States. Let me know what your thoughts are in the comment section below. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. And if you need any preps, I'm talking about anything from A to Z, CanadianPreparedness.com. Thanks for watching, guys. Take care.